You are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support the show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Wednesday, December 14th, 2016. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the four-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live. Steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America. Downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, David Dayan on what Exxon knew and how that may be a problem for who may be our next Secretary of State. Also, the ongoing bank robbery that is the American banking system. According to Lawrence Lessig, 20 Trump electors could flip. December 19th is just 5 days away. Head to our blog. You can find the Ask the Elector resource. Also, why Obamacare enrollees voted for Trump. And it's not why you think. Meanwhile, it's not just the Affordable Care Act or Medicare or Medicaid that is on the chopping block, but now too Social Security. Donald Trump's Petro-Americana vision coming into focus, and Voice of America and Radio Free Europe will soon be powered by Breitbart. 2018 may be more about Democrats pursuing the House than the Senate. And like Iraqi museum curators on the eve of shock and awe, U.S. scientists are copying U.S. climate data before the Trump regime takes power. And disgusting sellout Alex Jones scrubs the Pizzagate videos from InfoWars. And finally, how Clinton lost Michigan sounds like how she lost Pennsylvania. All that and more on today's program. Pardon my absence yesterday, folks. I had a personal day. Everything worked out fine. Everybody's well. But sometimes these things had to be done. So I did it. So take that, America. I was
very Peter Thiel of you.
Yes, it was. I was listening to the program yesterday as I was driving back down to New York City, and I listened to most of it. I actually switched back and forth.
I appreciate you listening to some of the show and not just Limbaugh.
It was a combination of Waze, Limbaugh, and you.
Waze, Limbaugh, and you. That sounds like a good... That could be a good show name right there.
There you go. I guess I didn't see hear the first part of the show. I think I heard... I know why I didn't listen to it, because it was the interview that I had just done.
It was with Mara Einstein.
And I was on MSNBC last night following Dan Dicker, who is a... We've had on this program. He's a former, oil trader. And just talking to him, you really do get an outline of what is going on with the Trump foreign policy. It is literally almost exclusively built around the notion of resource extraction from the rest of the world, and specifically oil. We now have a Secretary of State whose job it has been. And understand it, despite the fact that the guy has a tremendous amount of experience in terms of sitting down with world leaders and negotiating settlements deals.
Very complicated. Very complicated.
Very
deals.
Complicated
like, for
deals.
Real. He's a very smart person.
But when you are a hammer, everything looks like a nail. And he has had one professional experience in his entire life, and that is working for Exxon.
Since 75.
And I would guess, and I don't think I'm going out on a limb here to assume that he sincerely believes in his heart that what is good for oil is good for America, and that anything, the highest goal of America would be to secure this power. Literally, this fuel, I should say. And there's no reason to believe that's going to change. And there's every reason to believe that's going to be the case going forward. That our foreign policy is going to be dictated by access to oil. And so we may find that we have different sets of allies, different sets of adversaries, all around essentially extracting as much of this, well, I mean, I think at this point we can call it poison in terms of the way that we inject it into the atmosphere. And to get as much out and to control as much of it as possible with other producers of it. And he may provide the carrots and Mattis will provide the stick. I mean, because remember, all the generals we have too, their whole, not whole, but the vast majority of their experience has been in pursuing or protecting or defending oil and oil reserves. Every war that they have engaged in the past 30 years, whether it was Iraq War I or Iraq War II, has been intimately connected to oil in some fashion or another. So that's what we're building here. And then, of course, you've got Greg Pruitt at the EPA to secure our local, our national, our domestic oil rights, right? To essentially eliminate the obstacles to extracting it from our own place. I mean, that's all that we have. A series of people, and Rick Perry in Texas, the Energy Department, to the extent that I'll worry about the protecting the nuke thing on the side, but
what?
But to be fair, the billionaire in charge of public schools is just there to destroy public schools. But the number of people in this administration whose fundamental reason for being there seems to be eliminate obstacles to extracting and securing oil is really stunning. It's really, really stunning. And I don't know. I think, you know, what the implications of that going forward, I think we'll get a better sense as people start to sort of see this come together. That said, 20 Trump electors could flip. It would be nice if it was 20, because if 20 flipped for Clinton, Clinton would win. There's 37 electors. There's a 37 elector difference.
And then the head of Chevron would be Secretary of State.
Exactly.
Much more gentle oil company.
With that said, the holidays are around the corner, and you do want to make people eat. I mean, look.
It's true.
It's true. Life goes on, at least for the near term.
Foreseeable future.
Well,
actually, no.
Maybe not necessarily.
No, not the foreseeable future, right.
But Omaha Steaks offers unique gifts for gourmet food lovers. You can have a great steak experience at home. The most flavorful, tender aged beef, plus seafood, poultry, pork, lamb, veggies, desserts, appetizers, seasonings, sauces, so much more. Why Omaha Steaks? Well, they have over 500 gourmet gift ideas, highest quality cuts and ingredients, one-of-a-kind flavor, convenient and quick shopping for those on your list. Frankly, We've tried all of this here at the office, and you should buy yourself a gift.
It's really good.
Omaha Steaks is giving an exclusive savings just for my listeners. Listen to everything you'll get for less than $50. Two filet mignons, two top sirloins, two boneless pork chops, four boneless chicken breasts, four kielbasa sausages, four burgers, 12 ounces packages, all beef meatballs, four potatoes au gratin, four caramel apple tartlets, one Omaha Steaks, plus get four additional kielbasa sausages. If I had two freezers, I would get multiple of these because the savings, you're not going to get this all year round.
You would be so happy with another freezer.
Go to omahasteaks.com, enter my report, my code report in the search bar. You got to go in the search bar and you just got to add report. Add the family gift pack to your cart and get 77% savings. It's a gift guaranteed to be a hit. Do yourself a favor. Buy yourself a gift. And look, you got to have dessert, right? I know these are all supposed to be gifts, but...
Sorry, I'm taking it all, including my second fridge.
I could see sending this and getting one. My first inclination would be to buy me one of these.
Oh, yeah.
We're what now? 2 weeks away from Christmas? Less? Holy cow, seriously? Holy cow. There's not much time left to shop. You don't have to wrap and deliver your gifts. Choose a gift from Shari's Berries, incredible collection of gifts, and go ahead and skip the crowds and hassle altogether. Become a hero. Juicy, sweet strawberries. That's what we got. They were delicious. But Shari's Berries has more than just berries. They've added amazing new seasonal treats just in time for the holidays. This is the kind of gift I like to give. Something I can take to somebody, ship to somebody, and go like, oh, we should try that together.
Yes.
So that it's sort of like I get a little bit of something. It's a kickback. It's a kickback scheme.
You don't even need to spell it out. We exactly. All got it. We all know how you think. We all see the wheels turning behind those glasses.
I brought back... There's wheels turning behind the glasses.
You're a little scheming, yeah.
It's sort of a bit of a mixed metaphor there.
Not really.
With that said, we got a box here, and it was gone in, I'd say, close to 30 seconds. But I did manage to bring some home to my family. They had white chocolate covering. It's all chocolatey and with little
but
sprinkles.
But the big thing
it's delicious.
Was that the strawberries were amazing.
Strawberries
a
were
lot
good.
Of times people do that. The fruit is kind of
no,
it.
These strawberries,
those strawberries
were the size
fresh.
Of a fist. It's true. They were huge. Not
it's
literally.
True. They were a fist.
Like a baby fist.
There's only one way to get this amazing $19.99 Shari Berries deal and help support our show. Just visit berries.com, B-E-R-R-I-E-S-D. Well, you know, .com. Berries. Click on the microphone in the top right-hand corner and type in my code Majority Report. Shari's Berries has something for everyone in every taste. Again, go to berries.com, click on the microphone, type in Majority Report, order them today. Now you're stuffed. Oh, what are you going to do? I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to sit back. I'm going to read a little bit about food. There's so many foodies running around Brooklyn. It's unbelievable. My sister's a huge foodie. This will be actually a great gift for her.
Yep.
Bon appetit. You can find amazing seasonal recipes, latest food trends packed in every issue. What a great, thoughtful gift to give. One that gives all year long. You can keep up with the latest trends with Bon Appetit. I mean, you can, I guess you make recipes, you see what people are doing. It's very hot right now to be a foodie. Travel and events, they have city guides filled with recommendations. Each year, name a hot 10, the 10 best new restaurants in the United States. You can also check out events across the country. Technology and tools, the best gadgets for kitchens. Style, the most beautiful restaurants and kitchen, pro tips on how to entertain elegantly. Michael, you could use a little bit of that. On top of a great deal, $12 for a yearly subscription. That's $1 a month. $1 a month. You'll receive an exclusive tote bag. amazing seasonal recipes, latest food trends packed in every issue, and a cool Bon Appetit tote bag. Perfect gift set for the food and cooks, food lovers and cooks in your life. Use promo code 150FF. 150, what is it? Oh, it's, I'm sorry. No, it's 15 off. 150FF. Start shopping now at bonappetit.com/giveBA. We'll put a link to that, obviously, in our show notes. All right, going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll be talking to David Dayan. We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report on the phone. Ladies and gentlemen, always a pleasure to welcome back. I'm getting into like a regular habit now because of the tremendous onslaught of news, I guess. I don't know. The hits just keep coming with Donald Trump, and he's on that beat at The Nation magazine covering what, the first 100 days of the Donald Trump regime, as it were?
Yeah, I mean, I think more important, we need a catchy name for this segment.
This segment? Like,
hey,
day in,
it's
day
Wild
out.
Wednesdays.
How about that? Day in, day out.
There it is.
All right, well, we'll work on it. They can't all be gems.
I don't know.
Just a reminder, folks, in Portland, Thursday, December 15th, that's tomorrow, 12 p.m., people are meeting at the Pioneer Courthouse Square to protest and, I guess, call for the electors to flip their votes. Lawrence Lessig's claiming that 20 Republican electors could flip. That would make things, that would really screw up your beat, wouldn't it, a little bit?
I know. I mean, come on, Lessig. Tamp it down. I got business to take care of.
Yeah, that is like one of those things where you just, what a great way to lose a gig.
All right,
but let's talk about this guy who looks like and there's actually we're seeing some pushback here on Tillerson from Republicans, and of course you're going to need at least three or four Republicans.
If that happens, it's going to be about around the Russia stuff, right? I mean, that's what the McCain sort of foreign policy neocon establishment is concerned about.
Yeah, and remember, I mean, it's interesting, you know, I had forgotten this, but it was only 4 years ago that Mitt Romney said our number one adversary in the world was Russia.
right. And Obama dismissed it.
Yes, indeed. And I would imagine that Donald Trump dismisses that as well. But there's another issue that Rex Tillerson has, other than the fact that he sees the entire world like one big, basically, gas station.
Well, it's related to that. So, I mean, I'm sure you have had people on talking about the Exxon New campaign.
Yes, a while back. And just remind people what this is. And this is...
Right.
Go ahead.
So, there were revelations that 35, 40 years ago, Exxon was in possession of evidence of the catastrophic effects of climate change. And they did not disclose this. They did not factor this into any of their investor reports, which, you know, I mean, investors might be interested to know that there would be this catastrophic effect from the very business that they're invested in, which could lead to the dissolution of that business at some point in time.
Right, and we should say, let me just want to make one point here. But that's not presupposing that these shareholders would have some sense of like, well, I don't want to be investing in something that's going to end the planet. It is
that money, right?
At one point, they realize like, hey, governments may say we can't afford to kill ourselves anymore with this,
right?
And we're going to have to promote, let's say, I don't know, solar or something.
Right, and there's a difference between lying to the public, for which there is, it's hard to sort of sanction that in any real way, and lying to your own investors, where there's an entire apparatus set up at the Securities and Exchange Commission that tries to prevent you from lying to your own investors. So when Exxon put out materials that said, oh, climate change isn't a big deal, and we still believe that our business is viable, When they did that in investor communications, that becomes an actual issue. So the Exxon New campaign sought to sanction, to get attorneys general on board with prosecuting ExxonMobil for failing to warn the public and failing to tell investors of the risks of climate change. And, you know, Eric Schneiderman and some of his colleagues have been working on this. And in August, the Securities and Exchange Commission asked ExxonMobil for documents. And it was sort of related to this. It wasn't exactly the same. But what they were asking for were documents around how ExxonMobil calculates what they call their proven reserves. So if you go to any investor report of any oil company, the big thing that they mention there is the proven reserves. We have X billion barrels of oil available to us in the ground from different leases we have on different oil fields and wells that are inactive. And what this says to investors is that this is going to be a going business for a long, long time. And they put a dollar value to those proven reserves. Like, we have 8 billion barrels in the ground, and we expect the price over time to be this much per barrel, and that's how much value we own, basically. So two things is what the SEC wanted to look at, two things relative to that. Number one, how Exxon factored in the cost of potential climate regulations. You know, we have this Paris climate deal that 194 nations have signed, and even if the U.S. pulls out under Trump, you're still going to see countries where Exxon does business needing to cut their carbon emissions. And it could make it, you know, difficult for Exxon to actually extract their oil from those areas of the world. It might be less economically viable, you know, and so the question is, are they factoring in these costs in their communications to investors? And that's number one. Number two is the price of oil has fallen from $117 a barrel in middle of 2014 to something like $28 a barrel in the beginning of 2016. It's now sort of jumped back. OPEC announced a cut in production, but it's still only around 50. Or 55, and ExxonMobil has never taken a write-down on its reserves, relative to that price. For example, companies like Chevron have taken a $50 billion write-down because the value of the reserves are suddenly not as valuable anymore if the price of oil is half what it was. So,
but couldn't Exxon argue that, well, our plan is to get Donald Trump elected and to install Tillerson in as Secretary of State, and he will be able to negotiate a drawdown in production with the Russians and OPEC, and the price will go up to $200 a barrel.
What's interesting is about that is that that's actually the opposite of what Trump is promising in his campaign. He said that we're going to make America a great hub of oil production again. We're going to restart all this oil production. Now, the truth is that America has been ramping up its oil and gas production, but that would increase the supply, which would have downward pressure on the price. It's interesting to sort of play that out. That would be exactly what the Russians wouldn't want, is for America to continue to try to be this oil and gas power. It's what the oil and gas industry might want because they'd have a larger share of it. But what that means for Exxon is interesting. And, so in August, the SEC came out and they wanted these documents because they wanted to know the calculations, which nobody really understands. What are the calculations behind these proven reserves? If Exxon says we have $100 billion worth of oil and gas in the ground, what does that mean? How is that calculated in any way? And is it deceptive in some way to investors? And so that is sort of the basis of this investigation. Now, as you rightly point out, if Rex Tillerson is in the cabinet and Donald Trump is in control of announcing and confirming and appointing seats on the SEC, it's unlikely, let's say, that ExxonMobil is brought up on charges by the SEC around this. There are already two vacancies.
You think?
SEC. Yeah, there are already two vacancies. A third, Mary Jo White, is leaving, and all of the top leadership of the SEC has announced their resignations as well in the wake of Mary Jo White's announcement.
Let me ask you this. The production of those documents, do they become public? I mean, in other words, if Chevron, you say, has done this. They have at least discounted. I mean, yes, and I think everybody sort of accepts that, like, look, it's impossible to predict the future, but, after extended period of time where the price of oil is a quarter of from what it was that you calculated the value of your reserves, one would expect at least a public, some type of
an alteration of some sort.
Yeah. And I guess the reason why I ask this is because I think to be fair, Donald Trump is going to inhibit the SEC's investigative power enough that even if Rex Tillerson wasn't the Secretary of State, that Exxon would have very
Correct.
Little to fear going
Correct.
Forward. But
well, and let's be even more candid, and that the SEC wasn't exactly this aggressive machine prior to
exactly.
Donald Trump's election.
Right.
So ExxonMobil probably didn't have anything to fear before this.
But it seems to me the big fear, if I was Exxon, it would be two-part. One, in terms of the Exxon knew, and I keep waiting for this, and I've talked to some people who around this, and I haven't heard anybody who's been able to give me a satisfactory answer. But the tobacco settlement was built around this notion that that it could be brought by state attorney generals who were having to pay for states who were having to pay Medicaid costs of people who had smoked, and that's the way
Right.
they developed who had standing to raise this issue. And it seems to me there's an argument here, not that Pam Bondi's going to be terribly interested in this, but maybe you find attorney general Maybe in New York, you could say, look, Hurricane Sandy, there is significant evidence that this the sea walls, the sea level has risen. That's why we suffered $50 million worth of damage, whatever the number is.
Right.
And we're going to bring an action against Exxon. My question is if these documents are forced to be produced by the SEC, will the public have access to them even if the investigation is dropped because of the nature of these? And then do we getting basically like a version of discovery?
I don't know that you can bet on that. I mean, this becomes part of an investigative record. They exist. They could potentially be subject to the Freedom of Information Act. But it's, let's say, unlikely, especially if a case is not brought.
Right.
It's somewhat unlikely, it seems to me, that those documents, which the SEC can argue are part of, you know, the internal deliberations of a private or a public company, cannot, you know, be revealed, citing, you know, that this would, you know, be trade secrets or corporate secrets or something like that.
All right, so I want to change topics here in a second, but before we do, are you aware of any senators? I'm not going to hold my breath in terms of the Republicans, but are there any Democrats who are going to be raising this during Tillerson's confirmation hearings?
I could see it coming up. I mean, someone like a Sheldon Whitehouse, who has been laser focused on climate change, or Brian Schatz, I could see them bringing this up. I mean, certainly, the fact that you have an oil company executive becoming Secretary of State, that seems like something that, you know, you could relate. If you think climate is a diplomatic issue, which it is, we have this accord with 190 countries. It seems like it should be part of the public debate. And we'll see where Democrats go with it.
Let's turn to the ongoing, I mean, the stuff I'm reading about Wells Fargo now, and of course, you and I have talked about this for years. You've literally written the book on this. The Wells Fargo thing, I think we spoke about what they were doing. I can't remember if it was on this program or Ring of Fire, where Wells Fargo, I think people know this story, 3,500 employees were fired because they supposedly
5,300.
They all went rogue. And had the same idea of taking existing clients who were buying one product and without telling them, signing them up for another product and charging them. And because of quotas. Well, the last thing I heard, and then I want to talk about the story that you've written out, but I also want to talk about your piece in response to Ta-Nehisi Coates. But the thing I heard about this, which really just blew my mind, was that Wells Fargo is arguing that the arbitration clause that they signed in their contract with people who are doing business with them. So I go in there and I open up a bank account, let's just say.
Right.
And the fine print says, if you have any problems with us, we're going to go to arbitration. You can't take us to court. And they're now claiming that that arbitration clause is binding to the accounts that were fraudulently set up for them.
That's correct.
Which That's is great.
and they're winning on that argument.
It is so insane. It is literally like me saying, like, hey, I have an arbitration clause in you know, this account that you signed up for at bank. And yes, I went to your apartment and I stole your TV, but we can't tell the cops, so we gotta go to arbitration about it. It's
They've
crazy.
Decided to make it a blanket agreement. And you know, A fake account that they signed off on with a fake signature has a real binding arbitration clause, apparently.
That's insane. It's insane.
Yeah.
But talk about the, talk a little bit about the, what's going on with Prudential.
This latest thing is that in addition to the products that Wells Fargo sells by itself, it has some partnerships where it sells products in conjunction with other companies. And one of the bigger ones is Prudential. They have a partnership to sell term life insurance through the Wells Fargo website and also through in-store kiosks. Now, even if there wasn't any hanky-panky being done with this, the think of, listen to this. Now, normally when you get life insurance, you need to go through a physical exam. You need to have some proofs as to your personal health and things like that. They set up a program where you could go to a kiosk in a Wells Fargo store, answer about 10 minutes or 15 minutes worth of questions, and get life insurance. Like, that quick, with no physical medical exam, nothing, you could just grab life insurance. And it was low cost, to be clear. It was like $300 a year in premiums. But I'm not sure that it's the best life insurance, let's just say. And who knows what kind of exclusions and exemptions there
right.
are embedded within that.
But you're gone
so
anyways. What are you going to do, complain?
I find problematic. The
right.
product itself is weird. But, you know, just like they did with their other accounts, Wells Fargo employees would get credit towards their sales goals if they sold some of this Prudential life insurance. Or I shouldn't say sold, because bankers are not allowed by law to sell insurance. The steering of these people toward the kiosk or toward the website is what they would get credit for. But what they were doing, just like they were doing on their other accounts, is they were signing people up for this life insurance without their authorization.
Well, but they're not selling it. Right?
They're not allowed. And in fact, what they would do is they would, there were different variances on this scam, but they would sign people up and then take them off and then sign them up the next month and on and off and on and off, getting credit toward the sales goal each time they signed them on to the life insurance. This was found out because Prudential decided internally to do an investigation into, hey, Wells Fargo's having these problems. Is there anything going on with our life insurance partnership? And sure enough, these individuals at Prudential found all of these problems. I mean, and it was very obvious because the people signed up had addresses that said Wells Fargo Drive on them, as if they lived at Wells Fargo Drive. And they had email addresses that were johndoe@wellsfargo.com. So it was painfully obvious that people were being signed up without their knowledge for this life insurance. However, and this is what's interesting, when these individuals at Prudential in the sort of internal affairs department of Prudential brought this up to their superiors, they all got fired. And there is a whistleblower lawsuit. This is how this all came out. There's a whistleblower lawsuit going on right now where these Prudential employees are saying that they were retaliated against for giving this information about the fake accounts to their superiors. Now, since this has come out in the New York Times, Prudential has suspended the My Term, which is the name of the life insurance, the My Term campaign with Wells Fargo. However, they haven't closed the My Term insurance at all. They just suspended it pending an investigation. Prudential has the same kind of partnership with other banks. And this is kind of amusing. One of them was this bank called South Carolina Federal Credit Union. And I put them in my story, and some PR head from South Carolina Federal Credit Union wrote me and said, please remove us from that. We only did that once 3 years ago, and we no longer are in partnership with Prudential. And I wrote back, and I said, well, why do you have a link on your website that says sign up here with Prudential My Term Insurance in an exclusive partnership with South Carolina Federal? And they wrote me back and said, that was an oversight. we've since taken that down.
Wow, that's quite an oversight.
Yes. It was an oversight that for 3 years they were still promoting.
Kevin, are you updating the blog? Oh my God.
Anyway. Jeez.
So wait a second. What kind of internal controls does Prudential have that they may be, I mean, that they didn't notice that, like, wow, this is, or are they just like, well, we take the money and we, are they actually getting money?
Worse than that. They found that in the first year, this partnership.
Now, one thing I want to make clear to people.
Started in 2014, and in the first year, 70% of the policies lapsed. Like, don't you kind of look, hey, why are 77% of these policies lapsing if they're being sold through Wells Fargo?
So now, wouldn't the Wells Fargo people do the initial deduction from the Wells Fargo account to pay for it? And then the problem is that...
I mean, that's a good question. It's unclear how many of those deduction things were set up through people's bank accounts. There is evidence that at least one person complained that these deductions were being made from their bank account, but it's unclear whether that was set up in every case, and that's something that requires some more investigation. If so, this would be almost potentially a bigger issue than the fake account scandal, which there weren't a lot of deductions from people's accounts involving. That was more about, you know, claiming sales growth so that they can tell investors that they're a growing company. If they were doing this in this Prudential partnership and taking the money out, that would actually be a bigger transgression with respect to consumers.
But of course, they've signed an arbitration clause, so that's okay.
Right. Well,
if we're stealing your money, I mean, we're just going to have to arbitrate.
It'd be a good question if it covers, you know, if you have an account at Wells Fargo, does that cover arbitration on Prudential products as well?
Wow. All right. Well, lastly, I know you got to run. Do you have a minute?
Yeah.
Okay. Let's just talk about this. You made a piece in response to Ta-Nehisi Coates' piece in The Atlantic about President Obama, and his story is entitled "My President Was Black," and it's a really he's a great writer. It's worth reading.
Right.
But you do raise a something that Ta-Nehisi Coates does not really seem to in any way contemplate, and that is the foreclosure crisis that we had in this country, that in many respects Obama aided insofar as did not implement any real meaningful programs to address the foreclosure crisis head on.
Right. And one of I wanted to get into that is how this had a disproportionate impact on people of color, which is something we know from the statistical analysis. If you look at the Federal Reserve's survey of consumer finances, they show that the racial wealth gap, it expanded in the Obama years, and that was largely due to foreclosures. Ta-Nehisi Coates mentions the racial wealth gap, but he doesn't mention that it expanded under Obama. And when you look into it, that the reasons why, you just can't escape the fact that this was due to, you know, creating a foreclosure mitigation program that didn't mitigate foreclosures, that responding to the largest consumer fraud in American history, this false document scandal where people were engaging in foreclosures under false pretenses with fake evidence. Responding to that with no sanctions for the people involved and very little meaningful relief for homeowners to reallocate those losses. You know, you have to come to the conclusion that Obama has some culpability here for this very dramatic disintegration of wealth for African-American and Latino families. I mean, Brad Miller, who I don't know if he's been on your program, but he was the former congressman who was credited with co-authoring the legislation that became the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. he has called this an extinction event for the black and Latino middle class. That's what he's called the foreclosure crisis. And you know, we've gone over on talking, me and you, about the myriad ways in which the Obama administration, you know, put their thumbs on the scale in protection of bank balance sheets, but not in protection of homeowner balance sheets. And I just thought, you know, I've seen all of these legacy pieces about the administration and what Obama meant, and none of them wrestle with this part of his legacy, which is part of his legacy. I mean, it's inescapable. You cannot completely talk about who this president was and what he meant without noting that when people of color and millions of American homeowners really needed his leadership, that they didn't get it.
And let's be clear that obviously Obama's not responsible for the financial crisis, but the ongoing, the 9+ million families who lost their homes, he could not have necessarily saved those each one of those homes. But there were many different moments where he made a fundamental decision that was contrary to providing direct relief to these people. I mean,
absolutely, and this is all in this piece, and you know, practically everything I've written in the last 6 years. This was a policy, and there were distinct policy choices made. There were promises made at the beginning of the Obama administration. We're going to put $100 billion towards foreclosure mitigation. 8 years later, $20 billion has been spent. We're going to, modify 4 million loans. 8 years later, barely 1 million of these modifications are still active, and about 40% of them have failed. We were going to, on the campaign trail, Obama said, we promise we're going to change the bankruptcy laws to allow bankruptcy judges to modify loans for primary residence mortgages. And then his economic team whipped against that when it came up for a vote.
That was the cram down. That was the first sign, yep. I think, in 2009. I mean, I remember that vividly because that was the first moment where there was some of us emo progs at the time saying, hey, wait a second, this is a problem. But let me finish. Let me just end this with one quote from your piece, because as I hear stories of, and this is a good segue into what I'm going to be talking about in the next part of the show, but as I hear stories, we heard some of this last night with Bernie Sanders, or 2 nights ago, the town hall with Trump voters, where they said, well, we don't really think Trump's going to do that stuff about the Muslim registry. Or that piece in Vox about the county in Kentucky that voted against Obamacare, but were like, well, we don't think he's going to take away, we just think he's going to do what's right. Projecting upon Trump these sort of notions without sort of really contemplating the implications of a completely controlled Congress. I think this quote at the end here is really where the real damage has come. You write, Coates squarely blames racism for the rise of Trump, but the destruction of faith in institutions also plowed that pathway. Obama sapped the faith when he could have restored it, and now his party, the one that believes government can act to protect its citizens, is at its lowest ebb in 90 years. I think there's a lot across the board, not just with these voters, but I think with a lot of different voters, that dynamic, I think, made this election far closer than it should have been. And that, mixed with a couple other factors, made it one that the outcome was not predictable.
Right.
But, David Dayan, thanks so much for your time today, buddy. I always appreciate it.
Okay, thank you.
All right, folks, that is David Dayan. Of course, now I will say this. You can chase down all over the web where David has written. But that is, I'm going to give you a little secret. This is like that time that Matt Iglesias wrote about Penn Station in New York. where, do you know this?
No.
I had known this secret, but
yeah,
at Penn Station in New York, people all stand up. I mean, it's like this in I think all, I don't know, major city, urban train stations. Everybody stands in this big sort of like open square.
Yeah.
And looks at the board that keeps updating when the trains are going to come. Yes. And then everybody lines up. There's a huge line. You got to take a stairway down or an escalator down. Okay, well, here's the secret. At Penn Station, there's actually a subfloor. Between that floor that you stand on and where the tracks are.
Yeah.
And if you go down that half floor and you wait there and you got like the little departure things like at the airport.
You're better positioned.
You can sneak in. It's not even sneaking in. That's the weird thing about it. It's like
you're better positioned.
They're better positioned. So you can actually, you know, if you've ever wondered, like, how come I got on this train and there's already people on it? Well, I'm usually one of those guys. And Kelly is too.
I'm not a guy.
And she's not a guy. And we don't travel together. Just want to make that clear. So here's my little of that life hack for David Dayan. You can go to the Nation. You can go to the New Republic. You can go to the Pacific Standard. You can go to the Atlantic Monthly. You can go to all of the top
Enough,
publications.
David. We get it.
In the entire sort of internet world. Or you can simply head over to David Dayan's secret, and I mean secret, Tumblr. It's David Dayan, spelt like David, and then Dayan, like spelled like that, .tumblr.com. We'll put a link to it.
You can also Google David Dayan, and all of his most recent articles will come up.
Not necessarily.
I have done it.
Not necessarily.
Okay, well, I did it, and it happened. So.
Well, okay.
Okay.
So, okay, I guess it's just a standoff then.
I'm going to do that right now. I'm going to do that.
Oh, see do it. It's crazy.
Hold on. Let's
it's
do this.
It's crazy.
All right.
Well, no, I'm just saying I think you
so
get a more comprehensive.
Kelly's right.
Okay, what do you do? Just do it. Well, I guess his Tumblr name. Comes up first. But what are you doing? Looking on news or what? No, it's not as clean of an experience.
Oh, all right, you're right.
Going back to November 30th, there you go. Bill Moyers, forget
okay,
that.
Okay, Sam's right. I'm
Thank you.
Wrong.
Folks, this program exists because of its members. You can become a member today by going to jointhemajorityreport.com. We're constantly making things better around here. If you Google the majority.fm or the Majority Report on Google now, and you look at us, you'll see that our Google findings no longer say the site is hacked.
But this is preposterous.
Did we make that better, or did Kyle?
Well, Kyle,
maybe
Kelly asked. Kyle.
I have a lot of plans for this show and all of the members of it.
It's really Kelly's dad.
That's we.
That
all right. Look,
forced
I'm just saying,
Kyle.
Look, let's not engage in scorekeeping around here. It is we as an entity improved it. So there it is.
Kyle fixed it.
Kyle fixed it. But your membership makes it possible for me to occasionally pay Kyle for his services, like once every couple of years. Become a member today at jointhemajorityreport.com. Also, if you wanted to start a podcast, go to fans.fm. That's Kyle's baby, and that thing it's unbelievable. You can do a show just like this one, probably better.
This is the Teal Hour. Peter Thiel. We've got some blood cocktails, and we're mapping a chart for the 21st century. Oh, wait a second. My bad. Fans are shut down.
I feel like Michael just gets like a...
Sorry, Kyle.
Also, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY to get 10% off of your coffee. Still time to, I think. Well, I don't know. Try it. See if you maybe it'll get shipped. When is Christmas this year? The 25th? All right. Seems to hit the 25th a lot lately. And, all right. We're going to take a quick break. 646-257-3920. We'll be right back after this.